podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It is Tuesday, October 23rd. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us right now at Normal to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Legalization won't happen without all of our support, so make sure you make a donation or join Normal today at norml.org. We have a great audio stash for you today. We're going to check in with Matt Simon at sendtherightmessage.com. We'll hear some audio from their videos today, featuring some of the presidential candidates out there. Sendtherightmessage.com is asking questions about marijuana to all of the candidates as they swing through New Hampshire. Today we'll hear audio of Mitt Romney and Tom Tancredo and also get a chance to speak with Matt Simon up there. Also in the program today, some more Normal Conference 2007 audio. Today we'll hear Dr. John P. Morgan on the Straight Dope. You've got questions, we've got answers panel. Dr. John Morgan has appeared right here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash on a number of occasions, and this is part of the panel that featured Professor Harry Levine, Marsha Rosenbaum, and Dr. Mitch Earlywine. That's all here today in your free stash, Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We'll also have a free stuff giveaway in the middle of the program today. Stay tuned for that. Let's start off our show today by checking in with Matt Simon at sendtherightmessage.com.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming?
In our continuing coverage of the U.S. presidential race, we're going to check back in with Matt Simon at sendtherightmessage.com up in New Hampshire. Matt with Send the Right Message and Stuart Cooper at Granite Staters for Medical Marijuana have been asking questions about medical marijuana and states' rights to end marijuana prohibition at local New Hampshire campaign events. The two groups have been able to get every candidate on camera addressing these issues. Today we're going to hear audio of Mitt Romney and Tom Tancredo at some of their events, recorded again by sendtherightmessage.com. You can view all of their videos on their website. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Matt Simon joins us by phone today from New Hampshire. Matt, welcome back to the program today.
Hey, Chris. Great to be back on.
Great to speak with you again, Matt. Now, there's been a lot made of Mitt Romney lately, and his interaction with a medical marijuana patient made it onto CNN and other news outlets just a few weeks ago. SendTheRightMessage.com had an interesting interaction with Romney recently as well. I love the titles you put on this video. They say, How to Silence a Room Full of Clapping College Students. Tell us a bit about this particular interaction, Matt.
Right. Well, we were at an Ask Mitt Anything event at St. Anselm's College in Manchester, New Hampshire, and Philip Allen asked Governor Romney, I guess every time he hears the word marijuana or the word drug or anything like that, he kind of goes straight into his medical marijuana answer, which is totally absurd. This question was not about medical marijuana, and specifically not about medical marijuana. Philip asked him, He mentioned how Nevada had 44% of voters in Nevada had voted to end marijuana prohibition, and asked him, as a state's rights 10th Amendment question, what would you do as president? Of course, there are all sorts of legitimate answers to that that he could have given, which would have been consistent with his policy, but instead he ducked and dodged and said a bunch of dumb things about medical marijuana, which the entire room full of college students, you know, they don't get away with that. If they're writing a paper or something like that and the question is one thing and you write about something else, you get an F. So I think their reaction to Romney's ridiculous rambling answer was dead silence, and that told you what they thought of his logic.
And let's go ahead and listen to audio from that video clip. Again, the full video is available at sendtherightmessage.com. Here's Mitt Romney.
Good morning, Governor. My question has to deal with your understanding of states' rights in the 10th Amendment. Last year, 44% of voters in Nevada voted to end marijuana prohibition in their state, not just for medical use, but the whole failed policy. If you become president and a state chooses to end its prohibition of marijuana during your term, how will you respond?
I believe that marijuana should be illegal in our country. It is the pathway to drug usage by our society, which is a great scourge, which is one of the great causes of crime in our cities. And I believe that we are at a state where, of course, we are very concerned about people who are suffering pain. And there are various means of providing pain management. And those who have loved ones that have gone through an end of life with cancer know the nature of real pain. I've watched my wife's mom and dad, both in our home, were going through cancer treatment, suffering a great deal of pain. But they didn't have marijuana, and they didn't need marijuana because there were other sources of pain management that worked entirely effectively. I'm told there's even a synthetic marijuana as well that's available. But having legalized marijuana is, in my view, an effort by a very committed few to try and get marijuana out of the public and to ultimately legalize marijuana. It's the wrong way to go. We need less drugs in this society, not more drugs. And I would oppose the legalization of marijuana in the country, or legalization of marijuana for medicinal purposes, because pain management is available from other sources. Thank you.
And as we can hear, there are absolutely no applause at the end of his answer there. A rare thing for such a campaign event where people are usually clapping away. And it is kind of surprising that one of the Republican frontrunners is having so much trouble interacting with regular New Hampshire residents. And this is somewhat telling of Romney as a candidate.
Well, he's comfortable on stage, especially if he's able to. He's more of a performer, you know, an entertainer type person. He likes to crack jokes. Sometimes they're funny. He enjoys his grand entrances and his exits and shaking hands. But he's very much afraid that people are actually going to ask him questions that he doesn't want to answer. And they make him uncomfortable, and he says ridiculous things. So I don't know how well he's doing overall. The polls say he's leading in New Hampshire and in Iowa, but not nationally. That title goes to Rudy Giuliani. So I don't know what Republican voters really want right now. They've got a bunch of really messed up candidates from what I can tell.
Now, Matt, you also had an interesting interaction with former Colorado Congressman Tom Tancredo, who offered a surprisingly strong position on states' rights regarding marijuana. Let's hear that audio now.
If you get elected, you'll be the president during the 40th anniversary of America's longest war, the war on drugs. And I was just curious if you think we're winning that war on the federal level, and if not, what would you institute as policy changes?
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think we are winning it. The ability for, first of all, I will tell you that the federal government has a role limited by the Constitution, once again, that I don't know if people really want to accept, but it's the truth. I mean, the federal government should not be in the business of mandating sentences for state, you know, for the violation of certain crimes. It has nothing to do with, I mean, we have a certain set of crimes that are absolutely federal. Transportation across lines, you know, espionage. There are federal statutes that are appropriate. Right, and that's exactly what a federal government should be doing and looking to. But forcing states to adopt these things, absolutely not. I mean, I believe states should have the right. I have voted, I don't know how many times, four or five times now, I think we've had it up, where the federal government, states have decided to actually accept medical marijuana, right? Use marijuana to make it legal. Colorado happens to be one. I actually voted against it in Colorado. I voted no on the issue. It passed, right? Now the federal government is saying, you can't do it. We're going to go after, we'll prosecute you if you do it. I voted every single time and said, you absolutely will not. You know, I can be against, I can be pro-drug laws, against drug usage and all the rest of it, but again, it's the issue of where the federal government's law rule, where the federal government, where the Constitution actually gives us the right to intervene and where it does not. Now, states have that right. There is an issue about the ability for states to be the laboratory. That's the whole idea, right? Having states, the laboratories of democracy, things can work here that will not. Let's let them do that. Let's see what works and what doesn't. But I know the federal government's role should be limited.
I'd like to piggyback off of that. First of all, thank you for supporting the 10th Amendment by pledging to end the unconstitutional raid on state-licensed medical marijuana clinics. And I wanted to ask you, last year, 44% of the voters in Nevada voted to end marijuana prohibition in their state, not just for medical use, but the entire failed policy. If you become president and the state chooses to completely end the prohibition of marijuana during your term, how will you react?
Well, it is. I will react just as I've explained to you. That is a decision of the state. There are federal laws that I will uphold. And transportation, if it's a federal law against transporting against over state line, that's appropriate. And I absolutely will do it. And I don't believe we should have it. I don't believe, frankly, that we should eliminate drug laws. I'm not one that says we should do that. But I'm also telling you, if the state of Nevada makes that decision, okay, just understand that transportation across the lines will be enforced as federal government. The federal government has that responsibility, and I will enforce it.
Now, Matt, tell us about this interaction. Was Tancredo's position a surprise?
Well, he's been very consistent, despite being an avid prohibitionist. I mean, he's the first person to tell you, I don't think we ought to change drug laws. I've never voted to change drug laws, and he voted against medical marijuana in Colorado. But he is somebody who's read the Constitution and understands some of the basic principles involved, which it all would really need from the top Republicans to make at least some progress at reform. But Tancredo, you ask him about medical marijuana or even the war on drugs, and the first thing he says is, the Constitution applies here. The federal government's role is actually limited. Which is funny, because when you ask Romney about the constitutional issues, he says, I don't like drugs. People shouldn't smoke pot.
Matt, you've couched the questions to the candidates in terms of the 10th Amendment. You know, is this constitutional issue an approach we should be hearing from these candidates more, perhaps just so that we know that the candidates have indeed read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights?
Well, they do swear an oath to uphold it, and that, you know, is supposed to mean something to people. I know it means something to people in New Hampshire primary voters. So basically on the Republican side, we've interacted with all of them now. You have an anti-prohibitionist, a constitutionalist, and he answers every question great. You got Tom Tancredo, who is a prohibitionist, who understands the Constitution. And then you have the other six or seven or eight or however many there are who all pretend that the war on drugs is a permanent fixture that must be continued, and they don't want to talk about it.
Matt, can these presidential candidates really brush off the marijuana issue any further? I mean, we know that 830,000 Americans were arrested in 2006 for a marijuana violation. Won't they have to address that more often?
Well, I don't know yet how voters are going to respond, but my sense is that if things don't happen on television, they don't happen in the minds of most voters. We've cut away at that with the internet and YouTube and whatever else, but we have to eventually succeed in getting the stuff talked about more and more on cable news shows, hopefully in some of the debates that happen, and raising these issues in a way so that they have to get discussed on TV. Because if it's not on TV, I don't think it's going to be people sitting around the dinner table. We have to make that next leap, and definitely I think that the issue is discussed more and more and more, and it's been great hearing people say, oh, I saw on C-SPAN, I was watching this town hall, and I heard your person ask a question. So it is out there, and people around the country are seeing that in New Hampshire people are asking some of these questions and raising the issues. And, of course, the whole media is in the room. All the New Hampshire media was in the room for the Romney event. They all heard the question. They all watched the evasion. And when people don't hear about the issues, it's no wonder why it's not foremost in their mind. So we have to keep talking.
You mentioned being out there in the media, and this project at sendtherightmessage.com, it has gotten you in the media a few times, Matt. Most recently on the Arnie Aronson radio program. She's a well-known personality and radio host in New Hampshire. What was her take on all of this?
That was interesting. She actually wanted to talk to me about, she'd seen what we're doing, and she is interested in our approach, but she wanted to test me, I think, the first time she had me on the show, and she said, you know what? I know you're doing this whole marijuana thing and this whole, ask the presidential candidates questions about drugs things, but I want to talk about drug policy and how it relates to foreign policy and the war on terror. And I want to do it at 6:30 in the morning. Would that be okay?
That's a great after-coffee conversation there.
It was an after-coffee conversation. I woke up very early for that one. I wanted to be prepared, but it was, you know, I'd like to think that there are sympathetic people place, and if you can, you know, wherever we are, we need to identify who they are and form relationships with them and try to get on their shows, whether it's talk radio, whether it's cable access television. Arnie Aronson hosts a show called Political Chowder, and the website for that is politicalchowder.com. She does a weekly show with, you know, key players in New Hampshire politics. She did a half-hour segment, I believe, on industrial hemp earlier this year when that was in our legislature. And, you know, I certainly hope that she'll have us on to talk about decrim here in a few months.
Righto. I also saw John McCain at a New Hampshire event. Someone asked him about medical marijuana. McCain's temper seemed to flare a bit, and he said essentially that every dang town hall meeting I come to here, someone asks about medical marijuana. So these candidates are really having to address this issue quite a bit between your work at sendtherightmessage.com and the Granite Staters for Medical Marijuana Project as well. Is all of this unique to New Hampshire, or do you think the candidates will get these marijuana questions down the road as well?
I think it's unique to the issue primarily. If Tim Russert was asking these questions, or Larry King, or whoever else, we wouldn't have to be doing it. All the other important issues, for the most part, not all of them, but are being discussed in the national media, and those of us who are sitting around and don't have a lot of money and are trying to raise these issues in an innovative way, it's no wonder we're going to be motivated to chase these candidates around and ask them questions, because the thought of being ignored for another 4 years just isn't tolerable. We have this type of access, and we want to capitalize on it in any way that we can.
And Matt, let me ask, what's up next for you here? I know the presidential candidates will be swinging into your area quite regularly now.
Absolutely. They're here this week. They'll be here next week. We are working on some of the Democrats now. We're about done with the Republicans. We're going to keep trying to, whoever's in town, we're going to try to get there and try to do our thing. But we're definitely behind on the Democrats. It's very hard to get Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, when they do have a very rare town hall meeting, 500 people go to it, and it's pretty tough to get acknowledged for a question. So we're going to try for some big scores there, and, you know, I really believe that the best is yet to come for Send the Right Message. We're waiting for a big break, you know. We're waiting for the right moment with the right question that catapults this thing forward and changes the course of this debate.
Righto. Well, Matt, this has been a great conversation, as always, here today. Many thanks for joining us here on the Audio Stash, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you again, Matt. Matt Simon is with SendTheRightMessage.com. He's out there interacting with presidential candidates, asking questions about medical marijuana and marijuana prohibition. You can view all of the videos at SendTheRightMessage.com, and of course, we have links at NormalAudioStash.com. Stay tuned. Dr. John P. Morgan, co-author of Marijuana Myths, Marijuana Facts, is coming up next in his panel discussion at the 2007 Normal Conference.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
All right, it's time for our free stuff giveaway today here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We have a very, very cool free stuff giveaway today. It is an official 2007 Normal Conference t-shirt with art by Sonia Rodriguez. It's on the front and the back. Really wonderful artwork there by Sonia, and a great t-shirt as well. But this is a very special t-shirt. It's signed by Normal's founder, Keith Strub, and it's right up, we've got a picture of it right up online at normalaudiostash.com. So send in your emails today at freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. That's freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. Make sure you put conference t-shirt in the subject line and we'll draw a winner randomly. Big congratulations to those who've won a couple of our free stuff giveaways already. We're going to be giving all kinds of cool stuff away from the Normal Conference and Delta 9 clothing. Make sure you tune in here to the Audio Stash every day and send those emails to freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. In our Normal 2007 conference audio today, we're featuring Dr. John P. Morgan, co-author of the landmark book, Marijuana Myths, Marijuana Facts, which he co-authored with Lynn Zimmer. By the way, folks, we have a number of the full MP3s of panels and speeches up on the Normal Events podcast. You can link up to the Normal Events podcast at www.norml.org/podcast, or search Normal at the iTunes Music Store, and you can find it there as well. Right now, we have four of those pieces up so far. We have Tommy Chong's awards ceremony appearance. We have Rick Steves' complete keynote speech. We also have author Matthew Robinson's complete presentation. We're going to play some of that in Thursday's Audio Stash, along with a great interview with Matt. And also on the events podcast, we have this complete panel, The Straight Dope. You've got questions, we've got answers. We played a portion of that last week here on the Audio Stash with Mitch Earlywine and Harry Levine. Today we're going to get to another panelist on that panel, and that was Dr. John P. Morgan. It was moderated by Marsha Rosenbaum, a really wonderful presentation by all of the speakers there. Again, the full MP3 available on the Normal Events podcast. We've got a direct link posted on the Normal Audio Stash blog. Right up on MySpace, we have links to that at normalaudiostash.com. Here's Dr. John P. Morgan, Professor Emeritus of Pharmacology at the City University of New York, speaking on the Straight Dope panel, October 13th, 2007, in Los Angeles at the Normal Conference.
Thank you. It's, that didn't make it go off. Oh, okay. It did. It's a pleasure to be on this panel, a real pleasure, despite the fact that none of the talks are related much one to another, but it's still a pleasure. My title is Plants, Medicine, and Drugs. Human therapy begins, historically and other ways, with the consumption of herbal agricultural products. We search for plants as drugs, as we search for plants as foods. Somehow, somewhere, humans found it positive to ingest preparations from the kola nut, the ephedra species, the coca bush, cannabis, opium, tobacco, foxglove, and even willow bark. Now, pharmacology, the formal study of therapy, begins with the study and understanding of the chemistry of the plant preparations that we've talked about, and the reaction of those plant preparations with biological tissue, with human cells in the human body. I'm going to, at this point, rapidly skip over approximately 1,000 years and tell you that the plants yield chemicals. The chemicals bind to substructures on human cells, which pharmacologists have come to call receptors. We have receptors in our body. No reason we shouldn't respond to drugs, because we have receptors that bind the chemicals of the plant. That chemical receptor binding of various sorts, various cells, various chemicals, changes the function of the cells. And of course, if we find that change positive, we're prone to go back to that plant and try it again. And in fact, if we find that plant positive enough, we go back and pick the and identify the best ones and plant the seeds from that. So that over human history, there has been a tendency to find the desirable plant, convert it to an agricultural product, make sure you have plenty of it, and spread it throughout the entire culture. But remember, the issue is the chemicals in the plant, or the chemical in the plant, that binds to the human cell and changes its function. I said I'd skip over 1,000 years. The study in pharmacology of plant chemicals is really only about a century and a half old, and that's being generous. We analyzed morphine and coca in early parts of the 19th century. We had some idea of what the structure was like. But the study of the plant and its yield of the chemical and the application of those chemicals to biological substrates, either experimental or therapeutically, really only begins in the 1890s in the United States. The most important early plant yielding information to pharmacologists was the ephedrine plant, the ephedra species, called some parts of the western United States Mormon tea or Jerusalem tea. So the interest in early pharmacologists in the ephedrine plant led for them to study the structure of the chemicals from ephedrine and find out what they did to human cells. Okay, now I'm going to change and talk as an introduction about the opium plant. What's in the opium plant, which humans have been using for thousands and thousands of years? And of course, they used them for thousands and thousands of years before they knew what was in it. But I'll quickly skip ahead and tell you that the most important chemical in the opium plant is morphine. Morphine makes up approximately 10% of the weight of the opium plant, maybe 15% in some extraordinary species. It came as no surprise to me when I looked in some old opium books to find out people extolling opium from certain places. The opium from Afghanistan was better than the opium from Egypt, which was better than the opium from Java. And people had really strong feelings about the kind of opium you should smoke. The reality is, probably though, all that mattered was the amount of morphine in that particular plant. Now, does opium have other characters, other chemicals? It certainly does. And I want to mention only a few. It has some alkaloids, chemicals related to morphine. There's a little codeine in the plant, which doesn't matter very much because the morphine predominates. There's also a compound called thebaine, which is similar to morphine and can be used for the synthesis of other chemicals. So once pharmacologists and chemists elucidated what was in the plant, they could manipulate what they found and make other chemicals. The first semi-synthetic chemical was heroin. Heroin is made by a simple chemical treatment of morphine. We use thebaine and codeine to synthesize such things as oxycodone, Percodan, hydromorphone, hydrocodone. So we have a large number of chemicals which are fairly valuable, which we've made by looking carefully at the structure of the plant and manipulating the chemicals that are in there. There are some other chemicals in the opium plant which don't matter. Interestingly enough, there's one other therapeutically important chemical in the opium plant which has nothing at all to do with a sedative narcotic property. And that's a funny drug called papaverine, which happens to be in the opium plant. But searching the opium plant led to other kinds of therapeutic issues. So now, let me quickly say to you, there are four kinds of chemicals that bind to the opium receptor, to the opiate receptor in humans. One is, of course, morphine and the other constituents of the plant, codeine, morphine and codeine. Secondly, there are the semi-synthetic chemicals, which we make from things in the plant. They bind to the receptor, and that's oxycodone and hydromorphone, the stuff that's in Vicodin, hydrocodone. Now, once pharmacologists and chemists learned about the constituents of the plant, what could they do? They could synthesize other chemicals. So we have a group of chemicals which are useful in the treatment of pain and other conditions, which we made with the lesson of the structure of morphine. What are those chemicals? Methadone, propoxyphene or Darvon, fentanyl. These are chemicals which bind to the opiate receptor and cause important changes, even though they may not bear much resemblance to morphine, but they bind to the opiate receptor. Now, there's a fourth kind of chemical that binds to the opiate receptor. I mentioned what's in the plant. I mentioned semi-synthetic products. I mentioned completely synthetic products. The other kind of chemical that binds to the opium receptor is made, strangely enough, by the mammalian brain. So that receptor was not put there by God or whoever to bind to chemicals in the wild. It was put there to bind with chemicals that we made. We make morphine-like compounds on our brain, which bind to the opioid receptor, endorphin, encephalin, dynorphin. These are compounds that are part of our normal physiology and explain the presence of the structure, of the opiate structure. Now, with whatever time I have left.
You have about 7 minutes.
Oh, excellent. 7 whole minutes. God almighty. Let me tell you a joke. No, I won't. Let me switch to talking about the plant, which in fact brings us here today. Now, for a long time, all over the world, thousands of years, people have been ingesting the cannabis plant, products of the cannabis plant. They sometimes made beverages. They sometimes made preparations difficult to make by scraping the resin off. They'd sometimes smoke the leaves. They did a variety of things for thousands and thousands of years. Now, of course, the process that I described, people becoming interested in the chemistry, pharmacologists becoming interested in the structure of chemicals that were found, the manipulation of those structures, the finding that those structures bound to receptors in the brain, and the finding that we make something that binds to those receptors as well. There are endocannabinoids, the same four that I talked about with opium. Now, the cannabis plant is a, well, it's a synthesizing machine. There are probably more than 60 cannabinoids in the plant if you analyze them carefully. There are also a few cannabinoids that only exist after they've passed through the mammalian liver. There are a few cannabinoids that we make that are not found in nature, and some of them actually even work. But by and large, most of the activity of the plant is attributable to a single chemical, delta-9-THC or THC. There are other chemicals in the plant that have some activity, but again, their concentration is so low that we assume most of the activity is generated by the delta-9-THC. Now, the process I talked about before, can we make chemicals that resemble delta-9-THC and see if they're better, easier absorbed, work at lower doses, work at higher doses, can be delivered in some other fashion? Well, of course we can. In fact, some of the first experiments ever done were on an unusual compound called synhexyl, which is probably a semi-synthetic cannabinoid. That's back in the 60s and 70s. Then I want to talk just for a short time about an interesting compound. People knowing this history, knowing that people love to use the cannabinoid plant, began focusing on the history, and Dr. Mashulam is the most important person to identify THC and the other cannabinoids. Then in the 1970s and early 80s, a drug company in the United States named Eli Lilly began to work very hard to make a synthetic cannabinoid that would bind to the receptor and cause some of the positive effects of the plant. It's interesting, you should know that in the 70s, people at Eli Lilly were well aware of the reputation of THC or raw cannabis to decrease nausea and vomiting, to change appetitive behavior, a variety of other things. So in 1985, the United States government approved the marketing of a synthetic compound called nabilone. Some of you have heard of nabilone. It was marketed in the United States in 1985. The most interesting thing was, very illustrative, Eli Lilly gave up on the marketing of nabilone because our friends in the DEA insisted that nabilone only be marketed with the rigors of it being classified as a Schedule II drug, which meant the companies had to account for it. It means physicians had to account for its prescription. It means that it had to be held under lock and key. So the rigors of being a Schedule II drug caused Eli Lilly to say, screw this. And they quit. They withdrew the compound from the market in 1989. I tell you this point because it's importantly illustrative that the DEA and our governmental foolishness gave people searching for other benefits of the cannabinoid the same kind of trouble they gave to farmers. In other words, we can't have cannabis because we're keeping that illegal, and we can't have nabilone because it needs to be classified as a Schedule II drug. Now, nabilone was then marketed in Canada by a company who bought it from Eli Lilly, and interestingly enough, in the year 2006, this company, the Valeant company, applied for marketing in the United States again. So nabilone is now available in the United States again, sold as Sesamet. I don't think much of it is sold, but it works perfectly well. It binds to the cannabinoid receptor, decreases nausea. That's its main indication. Now, when one begins to work with the chemical in the plant, one can make many, many different versions of that plant. First of all, one can synthesize the plant, can synthesize the chemical. We synthesize the THC that's marketed in the United States as dronabinol or marinol. We've synthesized other cannabinoids. There's an interesting Pfizer compound called levonorgestrel, which appears to be an excellent pain reliever, but Pfizer's not interested in trying to move forward with the marketing because of the difficulty that occurs when you try to go against the DEA and the government by marketing a cannabinoid-like compound. Now, when I talked before about opioids, I didn't mention an interesting set of chemicals, which are receptor blockers. If you can make a chemical that binds to the receptor, we hoped that it would activate the receptor and cause this effect to come about. Also, chemicals that resemble the active chemical of the plants can act as receptor blockers. And one can synthesize from thebaine a compound called naloxone. Naloxone is in the emergency room of every emergency room on Earth. I think that's probably a true story. I made it up, but it's probably true. Because naloxone will rapidly reverse the symptoms of opiate overdose. And if you're in a city where people are injecting heroin or taking other compounds in a careless fashion, an opioid receptor blocker is a critically important drug. So naloxone, which came about by this process, finding out the chemicals that resembled morphine would sometimes block the opiate receptor, have led us to an important therapeutic advance by blocking the receptor. In fact, in the United States nowadays, physicians in private offices, if they get certified and educated, can treat heroin dependence with a compound called Suboxone. Suboxone is a marvelous compound. And that is, there's an opiate agonist, a compound that binds to the receptor and makes it work, called buprenorphine. But then with that, we mixed an opiate antagonist, naloxone. And we have people put it under their tongue. Why? Because buprenorphine is well absorbed from under the tongue, while naloxone is not. Now, why would we do that? So people won't inject it. So it won't get diverted. It won't get diverted and be injected by the heroin-using population. So this mixture of a blocker and an agonist is a good mixture. Now, I do want to close by talking about recent interesting experience with a cannabinoid receptor blocker. Chemists, pharmacologists found a cannabinoid receptor blocker. And the Sanofi company, a French company, began doing a variety of studies with this compound, which is sometimes called rimonabant, sometimes called Acomplia, and discovered that it had an enormous money-making potential. Can anybody guess why? Diminished appetite. So it's an anti-munchy drug. By blocking the cannabinoid receptor, whether the individual is a doper or not, he loses his appetite. He also diminishes some other appetitive behaviors, such as his alcohol consumption and his tobacco consumption. Now, the drug company got very excited about rimonabant, and they excited a lot of other people, including me. The only drug company stock I've ever purchased in my life, here's an interesting confession, is stock in Sanofi, because I thought rimonabant was going to come to the market and begin making billions of dollars. It may still, but it's been impeded in its entrance to the market because of a study that showed that some people who took rimonabant had those depressive suicidal thoughts. There was no proof that they killed themselves more often, but this, of course, worried people legitimately a lot. And so rimonabant's entrance to the market has been stalled by this finding that blocking the cannabinoid receptor caused some problems for the users. Now, I'll close by saying that the blockage of Romanovan's progress to the market made some of my friends in this movement happy because they're fans of natural product, multi-cannabinoid product, fans of herbalism, I might say. Now, I'm not going to say a whole lot more about that. I still believe that Romanovan is going to come to the market. I still believe that cannabinoid analogs may end up being extremely useful. And we need to be open in our minds to the process of pharmacology, the manipulation of active chemicals, and the production of unusual therapeutic advances in areas that we didn't even expect. Thank you.
That was Dr. John P. Morgan, Professor Emeritus of Pharmacology at the City University of New York. He's been a guest here on the program a number of times. There he was speaking on the Straight Dope, You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers panel at the 2007 Normal Conference in Los Angeles, October 13th. We have the complete panel audio posted online. Check out the Normal Audio Stash blog on MySpace for a direct MP3 link. We have a link as well at normalaudiostash.com, and make sure you subscribe to the very special Normal Events podcast. It's got some great programs up there. We'll have more Normal Conference audio for you right here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash and on the Normal Events podcast. Make sure you tune in every day. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.